This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We are live Friday, December 7th, 2018. And because we're live, you can call and talk to us. Me, my guest, give us a comment, give us a question. 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. Hey, I just got back from New Orleans, and what an amazing time I had there. Wow. I did several talks at Tulane University, and that was my first appearance ever at Tulane. And the gender and sexuality studies program there absolutely rocked my world. The students are so bright and so thoughtful and like thinking so deeply about these issues. I was really blown away. And then I taught at the women-owned and run sex-positive sex shop, Dynamo. This is a really gorgeous little gem of a place. You know, I love to see a little homegrown sex-positive sex shop in cities, big and small. And I loved teaching there. Both of my things were sold out. So thank you to people who came and saw me and participated in those discussions, which were great. Hope and Nico, the owners, are just phenomenal human beings. And I was so glad to share pie with them on my very last night. I actually went to a place called Fry and Pie, where all they sell is French fries and pie. New Orleans is weird, but once you get there and you sort of sink in, then nothing is weird. And if you think Portland is weird, you have no fucking idea how weird New Orleans is. I also want to say that one of the best things about going to Dynamo was seeing that there were local makers there. So when I walk into a store, I usually know the basic inventory of these places, everyone. But when I walked into Dynamo, I saw BDSM gear, harnesses, collars, whips, garter belts, all made by two local artists in New Orleans. Stuff I've never seen before. So if you're listening and you want to buy me a present for the holidays, that you're just going to call them up and get one of those things for me. Thanks so much for asking. And let me tell you about today's guest. Jess Tom is a New York-based actor, writer, and weird queer stand-up comic, gleefully providing the non-binary, queer, Asian-American, radical cyborg perspective that everyone never knew they wanted. They have appeared in videos by Funny or Die and Seriously TV, and their writing has been published by Reductress, By Shondaland, and Condé Nast's Them. Jess has been featured in Go Magazine, Splitsider, and The Fader, and they were named one of Time Out New York's LGBTQ POC comedians we're obsessed with. Jess was also a 2018 stand-up NBC semifinalist. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Jess.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting for me.
So so many questions. First, I saw that you posted on Twitter, quote, "This is a blast from the past." And so yes. I want to know, have we met in person?
I don't know that we have, but I do have a background in sex education.
Oh, that's why it's a blast from the past. Okay, because I was like, oh my God, have I met Jess Tom and like don't know it? That's horrible, Tristan. Oh, you have a background in sex ed. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I actually, I worked at the Pleasure Chest for about 3 years when I first moved to New York.
Wow. Okay. As you know, maybe the Pleasure Chest is my great sponsor and has been a sponsor for several years and makes this show possible. So thanks for that inadvertent plug.
Yeah. So it's cool to, it's cool that I'm able to do this, especially now that I'm like a couple years out of that world. It's like really interesting that I get to sort of wade back in.
Wade back in. Yeah. Okay. So I have a million things to ask you because you're this up and coming star. You're about to be huge. And so I can
I'm
say,
trying. I'm
yeah,
trying.
Yeah. I had you on my show first. And you've shared stages with, I read Awkwafina, Kate Bornstein, Aparna Nancharella, and Rosie O'Donnell. I need to know about Rosie O'Donnell because I'm wondering if this is connected to this. I heard you talk about a high-powered lesbian super PAC fundraiser that you performed at.
Yeah.
Are these things related?
Yes. That was where I met Rosie O'Donnell and got to perform with her. And that was actually really wild. That was summer 2016, so like the very end of the primaries, and it was just like you said, a high-powered lesbian super PAC fundraiser for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and I got brought on to perform on that show, and I was really, really like the little fish in a big, big pond. Like the headliner was Rosie O'Donnell. They had other really big like people like Fortune Feimster, like Rhea Butcher, Marga Gomez, who's a personal mentor of mine.
Oh my God. I know Marga. I've known Marga for forever.
Yeah. Marga's amazing. Yeah. She's wonderful. And she's been in my life comedy wise for about like 7 years now. So that was really cool to get to do that event with her. She actually put me on my first show ever, actually.
Really?
Yeah, she did in Berkeley.
I think she's one of the unsung heroines of our time in comedy.
Oh, truly.
I feel like other people have like made it bigger who aren't as talented as her. And she is incredibly talented.
I mean, if you just look at, like, if you look at the generation that she's from and like when she's been doing this work, it was actually one of my other Bay Area mentors, Ellen Sebastian Chang, who is an amazing theater artist, who was like, well, you know, back when Ellen was doing her sitcom and like before she came out, Margo was out there on the stage out talking about being a lesbian, talking about being gay, when nobody was talking about that. So I really think, I really, really admire Marga for the sort of landmark that she's been in the industry.
Yeah, and she's still going. She still has new material. She still has new shows. Like, she's like never ending.
Yeah, and she comes to New York very frequently. Like, I see her out here more than when I go back to the Bay.
Really?
Yeah, I'm from the Bay, so that's how I got connected with her originally. But she comes out here to do work, and I try to see her when she's in New York.
So we got off topic of the high-powered lesbian super PAC. But I want you to just sketch out for me the audience, the people who are going to the fundraiser for the lesbian super PAC to support Hillary Clinton. Like, who was there?
Well, it was... That was the biggest show I've ever done. It was at a huge theater in Times Square. There were, I think, 1,100 people there. And it really, really ranged from people like Edie Windsor was there. And Alison Bechdel, I think, wasn't at the show, but was at the after party later. There were Broadway producers there. There was somebody, a woman who is like the co-owner of the Chicago Bears or something like that. I'm actually not super well versed in the high powered lesbians of the world, although I probably should be.
Right. I don't know if I'm super well versed, but okay. Yeah. And like the lesbians were there, like Rosie O'Donnell. And
yes.
Stuff.
Yes. And then they had also released a bunch of tickets at a more affordable price. So there were a lot more just like normal queer people there too, which was really cool because I actually, going into it, I feel like it's a couple years out. It's okay for me to say this now. I did feel a little like the diversity hire at the time. Just because
I was wondering that because I was also wondering, like, did they get your comedy? Because your comedy is sort of embedded in queerness, and I feel like there might have been lesbians there who I think are different than queer people.
Yeah, I mean, that whether the nuances about identity aside, it was definitely true that there were older people there and people of older generations than me. And that was a big difference. It was a fun show all around. I did really well. Everybody did really well. Everybody, the audience was very supportive and there for us. But, you know, I couldn't help but notice, obviously, I'm on this lineup with all of these lesbians, and then there was me. And I didn't have even the amount of social capital that I have right now, which is to say mediocre. it's mediocre right now. So at that time, 2 years ago, I was even less of anybody than I am right now. Even, you know, less than 1,000 followers on Twitter, a common, regular person. And it seemed pretty clear that they needed someone on the lineup who was going to get like a younger audience, more sort of queer, left-leaning, like kind of the people who had been in the Bernie Sanders camp, as I actually had been throughout the primary, which was kind of my dirty secret as I was doing this show.
Wait, so you were like Bernie bait, or you were like bait for the Bernie people? This is amazing.
Again, no one else has ever said this. This is all just me inferring. So this is just me talking out of my butt right now. And if somebody who produced this show is out there listening, I am just inferring. But I couldn't help but notice. I mean, I was like 15 years younger than at least. I mean, maybe not. I think the next person closest to me in age was Rhea Butcher, who I think is in their 30s. And then after that, it went all the way up to, like, Marsha Warfield was there. And Marsha said something to me at one point.
Like, from Night Court?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God.
The very same. And she was amazing. And she said something to me like, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. And I was like, you're right. Like, you're literally correct about that. So to me, it really, I really thought I was kind of the odd man out on that lineup. But then what was really cool was that later at the after party, I actually ran into a group of like young 20s queer Asian American people who had all like scored tickets and they weren't expecting to go to this event and they really weren't expecting to see me. And then they came up to me afterwards and were like, oh my God, like, you know, we've never heard of you. We just thought it was going to be like Rosie O'Donnell and Marsha Warfield and Fortune Feimster. We didn't know anybody like you was going to be there. And we got to have this really cool little moment where I was like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting you guys to be here either. I thought it was going to be all like CEOs. And we all had a little secret moment with each other where we all were like, actually, I voted for Bernie in the primaries, which was all very funny. Of course, now that we know how everything went, I feel very proud to have supported the Hillary Clinton campaign at the time that I did. And I feel that I did my very best to try to stop this from happening.
Stop the dumpster fire that is the current White House administration?
Yes. Yeah.
No, you can't single-handedly do it. It's actually white women, as you know, who led us here. Conservative white women, it's their fault. So I'm just placing blame right now. Okay. Because they fucking voted for him against their own interests. So yeah, no, you don't have any culpability in that. Okay. My other question is, what is this thing, Stand Up NBC? Because that sounds really big. And you were a semifinalist?
So Stand Up NBC is, NBC does a lot of different diversity initiatives, like specifically in comedy. I know that they do an acting program, a late night writers program, and they do also a stand-up program, which is to get basically just to bring, you know, underrepresented voices in stand-up into the spotlight. So it's this whole big ordeal. They have basically a contest in a bunch of different cities all over the U.S., and people, like, line up all night to get in and do 1 minute of stand-up for these NBC people, and then, you know, if you get the call back, you have to come back the next day at 9 a.m. and do it again. I submitted online because I don't like to stay outside. And okay. Basically, I was a semifinalist, which means I was a finalist of all the people in New York.
Oh.
And then the actual final finalists are the final people from all the different cities who go and do a final showcase in LA, which was actually this past weekend. So it's a good thing I don't have hard feelings about that because I didn't do it. But that's okay.
Okay, but a finalist among New York people, that's kind of a big deal because it's not like there are amazing comedians all like in every state of the United States. Or maybe there are.
I think there probably are, but I will say New York is probably the toughest place to do stand-up, and there are the most of us.
Yeah, definitely you have the most competition. Okay, yeah, we have to take our
really
first
cool
commercial
to be able
break.
To do that.
Cool. When we come back, I want to talk about your self-produced half-hour comedy special. It's called Cold Brew, and folks can watch it for free on Vimeo. Just type in Cold Brew Jess Tom, because if you just type in Cold Brew, a lot of really weird shit comes up. So Cold Brew Jess Tom is the way to do that, just to cut to the chase. So listen to these commercials. We'll take a little break, and we will be back. This month, The Pleasure Test is featuring some great classes in their free weekly workshop program, Pleasure Ed. If you're in LA, you can check out Trans Support and Restore Yoga, their famous Squirt Shop, and Sex and Senses, an interactive event with LaWand Massager. Chicago will be hosting a Trans Sexuality 101 class and Head of the Class, Blowjobs 201. New York is featuring two hand skills class with Panic at the Crisco, Fisting Basic, and XX Extra Stuffing, Hand Sex, at the end of the month. Do you need to save on holiday gifts? Keep an eye out for the biggest, sexiest sale of the year starting November 22nd to get 20 to 25% off all products site-wide, plus free shipping. And Fun Factory is going to be hosting a pop-up in LA starting on November 14th. If you're not able to make it to a Pleasure Test store, use the coupon code Tristan at checkout on pleasuretest.com and you'll get a free gift. Hey everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Like to give and receive? Our friends at the Pleasure Chest are encouraging some radical reciprocation this season. For every purchase of any Fun Factory product or curated Pleasure Chest kit through December, they'll donate a Fun Factory menstrual cup to period.org, a pro-menstrual movement providing period products to those in need. December is the perfect time to be naughty and nice, because if you spend $100, you'll get a $15 gift voucher. If you spend $150, you'll receive a $25 gift voucher. This promo runs in all the stores and online. Plus, you'll get free shipping on all purchases at pleasurechest.com through December 21st. That gives you plenty of time to buy all your stuff. Also, if you follow Pleasure Chest stores on their social media, you'll be able to participate in their annual advent calendar featuring a new pleasure product and a daily giveaway starting December 14th. As always, use code Tristan at checkout on pleasurechest.com for a free massage candle, which with every As always, use code Tristan at checkout on pleasurechest.com for a free massage candle with every purchase. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking today with actor, writer, and stand-up comic Jess Tom. And Jess, as I was listening to myself talk about that, I thought, wow, how queer is this, that they're giving menstrual cups to a pro-menstrual movement providing period products to those in need. That is just, gosh, that's a mouthful of queer. That's sort of like comedy that writes itself.
It's very sustainable.
So I watched your half-hour comedy special, Cold Brew, which is available on Vimeo. And one of the central ideas that you explore in this is about a relationship and subsequent breakup. So my first question is, do you have people sign a kind of release when they date you that says, like, if this story like plays out, I'm going to be talking about you?
I want to say that Cold Brew was the only time I've done anything like that. So I don't have a long standing history of releasing a half hour of comedy after every breakup I've ever had. But this is maybe a cop out, but I kind of think, you know, it's just like what people say about any kind of writer, like, don't fall in love with a writer because you're definitely going to end up in their stuff. Mm-hmm. And the thing about Cold Brew, that I, at this point, like being a couple years out from it, because, you know, when I did it, it's very, very fresh and very, very raw, almost to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I put that out in public where people can see it, because I was like clearly working through my own feelings about the breakup. Mm-hmm. But now I'm kind of like, well, if you didn't want me to do that, you shouldn't have broken up with me in such a funny way.
Well, yeah, I don't want to spoiler alert it, because it is a really, it's a surprising breakup. I'll just say that. And you talk about a lot of things that have to do with relationships. One thing is that this particular relationship is interracial, but it was your first interracial relationship, not with a white person. So first, let's tackle your interracial relationships with white people. Tell me about that.
I think that in some ways, being a person of color who is relatively knowledgeable about like racial issues and racial dynamics and history, like histories of colonization and imperialism on like only the most basic level, in some ways it can be easy and also really hard to have relationships with white people. Hard because you know, a lot of the time you're confronting whiteness and white supremacy and all of these ways that this other person probably doesn't even know that they're enacting. But also it can feel kind of easy because it's easy to feel like, at least on issues with race, you can feel like, oh, I always kind of know more than this person, or like, I always, this is like kind of a sick way to phrase it. This is very callous, but like, I always sort of have the upper hand. Like, I always can be like, oh, you're being racist right now. And they probably are being racist, which is something I sort of speak to in the special that got flipped on its head for me when I started dating this person who was a black femme. And
then you said you were the racist one.
Yes, yes. And that was not the dynamic anymore. And all of a sudden I had to confront my own anti-blackness, my own inherent racism that I had really, like, from all of these years of only dating white people, I basically didn't ever have to look at it at all, because I could always be the one who was, like, shaking my finger and being like, nah, nah, like, you're a racist, you're a fetishist. Like, not really. Well, I guess that speaks more to the people I was choosing to date. But I really hadn't ever had to look at myself, at least as far as racial dynamics go. Or at least not in as far as like interacting with whiteness, which can be so like polarizing.
So this is what I love about your comedy, is like, you're quite political in your comedy. You don't back away from these pretty charged issues, but you do so in a way that can be kind of lighthearted and funny. So it feels like the audience is there with you. Do you feel that, or do you feel like people are like, oh, this isn't funny?
You know, it's funny. A lot of other people have identified me as a political comic, and I don't really consider myself to be political. I just kind of think that this is my life, and like, this is the way that I think. And like, I don't know, to me, it doesn't, like, I get how it is really charged to be like, I was in a relationship with a black person and I was racist and I had to confront that. And this person made me confront like something that I did that was racist. I get how that sounds really intense, but at the same time, I'm like, well, I mean, we live in a racist society, like everything is racist, you know? So for me to be like, I was racist is like saying, you know, I have short hair, or I'm wearing a black turtleneck right now, or something like that. I have tattoos. Like, it's just a fact. Like, of course I was racist. It's just how it is.
I think that's an interesting thing. I was just in New Orleans and I talked about sex and social justice, and I said from the stage that I was racist, and this white guy came up to me afterwards and said, you know, it's totally fine that you say that, but I'm not racist. And I was like, okay, not there yet. Okay.
Right. And I just think that is the thing about talking about race and racism, is that I think that everything would at least start moving in a good direction if like everybody could just look at themselves and be like, I'm racist in this and this way. And that's just what I'm kind of trying to model, I think.
Yeah. Well, in the show, you also talk about kind of wading into the waters of non-monogamy. Non-monogamy is a thing we talk about a lot on the show. And so, I want to get your feelings on non-monogamy and kind of where you are with it now.
Yes. I will say, okay, I'll say this to start. Currently, I'm 2 years into a very monogamous relationship that's going very well, as far as I can tell. fingers crossed. I think it's good, though. I really think it depends on the person. It depends on each of the people. It depends on each of their dynamics. I definitely think that one person could have a non-monogamous relationship with like one person or one people's, and then go on to have a monogamous relationship and then go on to have several non-monogamous relationships. Like, I think it just depends on everybody's boundaries, and like what works for one relationship isn't going to work for the rest of them. And I do think that in the non-monogamous experiences I've had so far, it's a little hard for me to say because, you know, I think I was younger. I mean, I was just younger than I am now. So I didn't have as good an idea of my own boundaries. I didn't have as good an idea of how to respect other people's boundaries or how to, like, handle my own feelings. So it's hard for me to say how I would do things differently now. But I do know that, like, a lot of the issues I came up upon in the past had a lot to do with emotional immaturity on my part and the parts of my partners as well.
So you're not ruling it out. You're just, but you, no, like, you're not ruling it out as, like, a possibility in the future. Okay.
No,
I just, no, I wondered that.
For my relationship right now, it's not a thing.
It's not
and that's, and that works for me.
So your comedy also kind of delves into some dark stuff too. in addition to racism, yeah. Well, you talk about funerals and loneliness and,
yes.
And this is all sort of sprinkled in with your commentary on like gay porn and glory holes. So it's actually quite clever. But have you ever thought, oh my God, people aren't going to think this is funny, or this is going to stop the flow of the funny? How do you incorporate that kind of darker material in?
You know, I think people are dark. I just try to not shy away from it, because I think actually that's the stuff that people relate to. I think people relate to watching porn and jerking off because they're lonely. I think people relate to, you know, being up at 4 a.m. and like wondering, like, am I ever going to fall in love again? Is anyone ever going to love me again? I think people really, really relate to that. And I think that, I mean, there's been a big question in the comedy community, especially with Hannah Gadsby's Nanette that came out on Netflix this year about, like, what is comedy, which I think is a really unnecessary question, but people are asking it anyway. And I personally, I don't think comedy always has to be funny. I think it should be funny probably at least 65% of the time.
But that seems precise.
I know, I really thought of it. I was like, oh my God, am I going to stop at saying 60 or am I going to go 65? I think it should be mostly funny because that is comedy. But a lot of things about our lives aren't funny. Or even if they are funny, they could be not funny at the same time. And I think it's like okay to connect with an audience on that level and to just be like, look, here is some darkness in me and there's darkness in you too. And now we're going to laugh about it.
And so you brought them up. Let's talk about Hannah Gadsby, who was kind of like, I don't know, appeared on my social media feed about 1,200 times, like just roughly.
Yes.
When their Netflix special came out called Nanette, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is shaking up comedy forever. And it's being done by a not femme lesbian. At least that's how they identified back then. What are your thoughts on Hannah?
On Hannah in general, or
the show and Hannah's comedy and what it means in the larger picture?
I mean, I think Hannah's cool. I think it's dope that Hannah had that hugely, hugely successful Netflix release after touring that show live. I think that that's awesome. I don't think Nanette has changed the face of comedy forever. I don't think that's true. And I think that a lot of people, both positively and negatively, made a really big deal out of it. Like, I think it's a good comedy special. I liked it. I thought it was funny. And then the parts that weren't funny, I didn't think they were funny because I wasn't supposed to. What's interesting to me, though, is recently I got back into watching Margaret Cho's specials from the early 2000s because I was doing a Halloween show where I had to do a 2-minute bit as Margaret Cho. So I was watching her specials, and I realized in, like, Notorious C.H.O., in I'm the One That I Want, which are both specials that came out in, like, 2000 or 2001, she talks a lot about eating disorders and drug abuse and sexual assault and suicidal ideation. And, like, a lot of the stuff that people are really lauding Hannah Gatsby for in Nanette. And it was just crazy for me to see that Margaret had been talking about those things in the years 2000, 2001. And I don't know that people remember that, really. Whereas, like, to me, I mean, I grew up on Margaret Cho. That's how I got into comedy. I was like, oh my God, she's been doing this whole time. And, like, mm-hmm. I just thought that was what comedy was like. Like, that is my base level for comedy, is talking about all this really dark shit.
I remember I was on vacation in Hawaii a couple years ago, and we found out that Margaret Cho's tour was, like, coming to Hawaii while we were there. So we were like, oh my God, we have to go get tickets.
God.
And,
oh my God.
And it was strange because, like, when I've seen her before, I've been in a queer urban kind of hipster audience. Right. And we all kind of get the in jokes and all that stuff. Right. So she gets on stage in Maui, and there's, like, a lot of tourists and a lot of older people. And I'm just thinking, like, is this going to go over? Like, do they know what butch femme is? Do they know what fisting is? Do they know what leather is? Like, how is this going to exactly go? And it seemed mm-hmm. to me like everyone thought she was hysterical, and maybe they knew what she was talking about or not. I don't know. But at one point in the show, she told a joke about abortion. And I just thought, oh my God, like, way to just, like, drop the mic, because in that room, and they were, like, really supportive of some really radical stuff around gender and sexuality. But when she made that joke, it was like half the crowd laughed and the other half was like, I might just stand up and leave now.
Or she's fearless.
God, she's fearless. And you just think, wow, how many people told her, do not include that joke. Do not include that joke. And she just, like, full steam ahead. But I feel like then all we hear is like, oh, did you know Amy Schumer made a joke about abortion? You know, in some ways, Margaret just doesn't get credit for kind of paving the way in some ways for other kinds of comedy, right?
Right. I mean, I really think that too, because I feel like when Nanette came out, there was also this big question of, like, what is the role of queer people in comedy, and, like, what's queer comedy, and is there a space for queer people in stand-up comedy, which is totally ludicrous to me because, I mean, again, first of all, I grew up on Margaret Cho. Like, to me, the base level stand-up comic is a queer woman of color, and I was like, yeah, that's, we're out there, we're already doing that thing. You know, 20 years ago, we were already doing it.
Yeah, all the queer comics, like, had a slight bitterness to them when we would text. All the queer comics I know, like, I would text with them and be like, what do you think of Nanette? And they're like, okay, really good, but these things they're saying about the show have been going on for more than a decade or two. Like, this is not a revelation. It may be a revelation to a certain audience, but, like, we queers have been on stages talking about this shit forever.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And even, like, if you look at the current face of stand-up comedy right now, like, the young people, the people who are my peers and slightly above, who are really, really coming into the spotlight right now, I'm thinking of, like, Chibuki Young White, Joel Kim Booster, Patty Harrison, Larry Owens, Lorelai Ramirez. These are all queer people. And, you know, and they all do different styles of comedy that a lot of the time aren't like the straightforward sort of set up punchline. Like, a lot of the time they're not really talking about their identities. I would say I'm a comic that talks about my identity in a very straightforward way. That's my style. But a lot of these people are out there doing all kinds of different things, and they're really the people getting shine right now. So it was just crazy to me to, like, all of a sudden be seeing articles where I'm actually mentioned by name that are like, stand-up comedy is not a safe place for queer people. And I'm like, well, then why am I, like, what are you, like, well, yes, and also mm-hmm. we're here and we're doing it. And I don't think that I have to choose between being a queer person and being a stand-up comic. That is ridiculous. There have been queer stand-up comics for a very long time. Queer mm-hmm. people are rife with humor. That is how we survive.
That is how we survive. Okay, we got to take another commercial break. We're going to pick up on that very last line of yours about survival when we come back. So stay with us, more with Just Tom when we return.
Hi, everyone. We're Emma and Finn, the hosts of the Normalizing Non-Monogamy podcast. Each Wednesday, we interview people from across the spectrum of non-monogamy to hear and learn from their stories.
So far, we've interviewed a wide variety of guests covering swinging, polyamory, kink, cuckolding, and much more.
Even with all of these guests, we know that there are so many different dynamics and stories to tell that we've only scratched the surface.
So we'd love to have you stop by and give Normalizing Non-Monogamy a listen, and maybe even share your story someday.
Hey everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I want to tell you what's coming up at the Pleasure Chest. It's really busy this month, so I'm going to kind of go fast. So get your pen and paper or whatever recording device. So in Los Angeles, December 9th, Intimate Partner Yoga. December 11th, Performance Anxiety Comedy Show. December 12th, Down and Dirty for the Holidays. In the West Village location in New York, December 9th, Give the Gift of Nudes. How to Take Great Nude Pictures. In New York City on the Upper East Side, December 8th, Party of Two Comedy Show. December 10th, a book signing of The Ultimate Guide to Bondage. December 11th, 8 Sex Tips for Hanukkah. That's with Tina Horn. That should be funny. December 12th, Down and Dirty for the Holidays. December 13th, Filthy Fucking Food, Cuffing Season Edition. December 14th, Awkward Sex in the City Comedy Show. And in Chicago, December 12th, Awaken Your Senses. Go to pleasurechest.com, click on events, you'll find out more about these. And I talked to you about this on the last show, but I want to remind you that there's this really cool vitamin company, And if you go buy stuff from them, which you should because they're fantastic and I've tried them out, and so I can definitely say that I endorse them. But if you use my code, you know, I will not get a lump of coal in my stocking. I will actually get advertising dollars. So that company is Care of Vitamins. Their website is takecareof.com, and you can get 25% off your first month, which is a personalized set of vitamins. Just enter the coupon code Tristan. Okay, we are back with Jess Tom, who is an actor, writer, and self-professed weird, queer stand-up comic. Just before the break, you said you talked about comedy as a form of survival for queer people. And so I wanted to ask you about what it's like to perform, to write comedy, to think about comedy, to perform comedy in times of, I don't know, off the top of my head, fascism, war, anti-immigrant violence, anti-LGBTQ policies, and all the shit that the government is pulling with us right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. I've said this before, But I really think that after the election, my comedy took a turn, whereas before I was really trying to present myself to a more general audience. And then after the election, I made the choice to become more committed to doing comedy for queer people and doing comedy specifically that queer people and queer people of color and queer and trans people of color would find funny, because I think we're really the ones who need a laugh right now. So I've been trying to do comedy now, right now, and that was how it was for the first year and a half. And now I'm kind of waiting around trying to figure out how I can do things that appeal to mainstream rooms that are also still funny to queer people, that are also not throwing queer people under the bus to a straight audience. So it's all, I'm figuring it out right now.
Well, this gets back to Margaret Cho, right? And the mainstream audience in Maui, but it's the same stand-up that she does in New York City and in LA.
Right.
And how to kind of balance all that stuff, right?
Right, exactly. And a lot of the time, you know, I'm doing the same material, but it just depends on how you present something to an audience. I'm also starting to try to move away from I won't say identity-based comedy, because all of my stuff is going to be about identity no matter what, but I'm starting to try to move away from doing comedy where I explain what it means to be non-binary to straight audiences, which is something I've been doing for the past couple of years. And I just realized over time that, I have a really good they/them pronouns joke that always goes over really well, that people have asked me to say on their podcast and stuff, asked me to say in interviews. People come up to me after the show and are like, oh my God, I love that joke. But I found over time that, that people aren't actually listening to it, or it doesn't change the way people address me or talk about me. Mm-hmm. And originally I was doing this joke so that I could tell the room, basically, look, this is how I want to be addressed in a joke form. Mm-hmm. And now, 2 years into telling that joke at basically every single show, I'm pretty much learning that it doesn't change the way people address me most of the time. So I'm starting to try to move away from kind of doing this song and dance for straight cis audiences.
It sounds like there's a tension there that you want to appeal to a broader audience, but also you want to appeal to sort of your tribe and community.
Yes. I'm starting to think I might have to just do some different comedy for each of these audiences. I do intend to appeal to mainstream audiences, but I don't want to. I'm tired of, like, essentializing myself in my comedy, which is something I feel like I've been doing for the past couple of years.
And do you address what's going on in the world in your comedy? Like, I've been to different stand-ups, some of whom sort of say it right away and get right into it, and others who just kind of avoid it. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I also go in and out of that. You know, sometimes something is happening that's so pressing that it seems like I have to address it, and that it's, like, not really fair to be like, blah, blah, I'm a queer person of color, and then not talk about these really pressing issues that are affecting other queer people of color, for example. But sometimes, and I am erring more this way these days, sometimes I just don't want to talk about it because I don't think people want to hear about it. Or especially for a queer audience, a lot of the time, they already know, you know, a lot of the time they already know and they need a laugh. And I would rather make people feel better than make them feel worse. Like, I think if I have a really good joke about something that could lighten the mood about it, then maybe I would do it. But otherwise, I'm not just going to talk about bad news just to tell people bad news that they probably already know from Twitter.
Right. Twitter, the ultimate source of our news now. Okay, well, we need to take another break. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just was going to say, I think about this time a couple summers ago when I went to the beach. I went to the queer beach, Reese Beach, and was having a really, really nice time with my partner. And it was the day that, like, Donald Trump said something about, like, he was going to, you know, take trans people out of the military, some whatever it was he was doing that day. And then these other queer people showed up and set up their towels nearby, and just then they were so mad about this, like, Donald Trump trans military thing, which, like, obviously, like, that makes sense, you can be mad about that, but they were being so mad and loud about that at the beach that it really harshed everybody's mellow. And it was sort of like, okay, yeah, we know, and, like, we're at the beach and we're trying to chill out, and that's kind of like, I don't ever want to be like, I don't want to deny that bad things are happening, but I don't ever want to be the person who comes in and just ruins everybody's good time because I'm mad about something that everybody is actually mad about.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show, Jess. I really appreciate this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Jess's website is jesstom.com.com. So you're writing out the words .com and then doing the period .com. On Twitter, they are Jess Tom. On Facebook and Instagram, they are Jess the Kid. And they have a ton of appearances coming up in New York City, which are on their website now, and you can find out about them. And there will be some appearances, I'm told, in the Bay Area. So I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my regular engineer, and Josh filling in tonight, everyone at Voice America. Hey, I want to remind you that now through the end of the year, if you fill out my survey all about yourself, you can win one of two prizes, $300 worth of stuff from Babeland or $375 worth of stuff from me. All you have to do is go to tinyurl.com/SOLPP. tinyurl.com/SOLPP. Fill out the survey. You'll be entered to win. And we're going to announce the winners in the beginning of January. And you might find yourself getting a box of amazing sex toys and books and DVDs and lube from yours truly. So do that for me, will you please? And then, otherwise, find me on social media. I'm Tristan Taramino across all platforms. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And until then, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.